What flat theory for me is basically limiting your dependency on any one particular state. We're trying to take control back by self-custodying. We are taking assets away from a centralized entity and educating ourselves on how we can have this radical ownership. Well, same goes for your citizenship. If you're born in one country, you only have one citizenship. The country basically has monopoly over you. And only 3% of people actually live outside of the country of their birth, which makes it 97% monopoly over you. And just this amount of dependency we have on our home country is painful because three-letter agency targeting you directly, you have nothing to do. A 6102 on Bitcoin, you have nothing to do. Civil unrest, you have nowhere to go. Or your country gets involved in a geopolitical instability and decides to go to war and you don't sign up for it. Well, what else are you going to do? So just having this another country to call home is just your geopolitical hedge against your home country's government, against government overreach, etc. So that's how I started 1B Passport. I was already a Bitcoiner, and I just kept talking how everybody needs a second passport. I did not have a company. I was not selling anything. I was just truly passionate about the fact that you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You can't have one citizenship. As a Bitcoiner, you must have a hedge in place.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. My name is Walker, and this is the Bitcoin Podcast. Bitcoin continues to create new blocks every 10 minutes, and the value of one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin. If you are listening to this right now, remember, you are still early. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes for sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Without further ado, let's get into this Bitcoin talk.
Well, Katie, welcome. Glad we were finally able to do this. It's good to have you on the show on another fucking Bitcoin podcast.
Appreciate being here. There's not enough Bitcoin podcasts any day, any time. 40 hours per week is what we need, right?
I've been saying it. Until we have more Bitcoin podcasts than like TradFi, podcasts, we just don't have enough Bitcoin podcasts. Like, we're sitting here today, Bitcoin is ripping up to new all-time highs. It seems like kind of a timid rip so far, though. It's like, it's up to like 113 something or 0.113 million. But it's like, come on, let's really just like bust on through there so we can count it. This feels like, okay, it's like kind of an all-time high, but like in a depreciating dollar. So like, is it really? I don't know.
Yeah, we've seen 20% candles. Like, what is this 3%? Yeah, it's all-time high, something to celebrate, but like, let's go. Let's have some fun.
Let's turn it up to 11, just rip the fucking knob off, Yeah. Well, stoked to have you here. There's a bunch I want to cover with you. You're for folks who don't know, so you started Plan B Passport. Your company was then, it was just acquired this year, right? Or this was last year? Okay, by Citizen X. So, I mean, maybe we can just start out. I think a lot of folks in the Bitcoin space know you, but like, how did you actually, you came to this country from Russia, I think like 9 years ago, right? You have, in that time, learned English, started a family, started a business, had that business acquired, like been at every Bitcoin conference I've been to, and then probably a ton more. How did all of this happen? Like, how did you get to that point? And also, how did you just like do so much in that time? It's quite impressive. It's that immigrant hustle, you know?
Yeah, immigrant hustle for sure. Well, I moved here as a 21-year-old, didn't fully have a plan, came here on a tourist visa. My original plan was to actually go back to school because I never graduated bachelor degree in Russia. And I was a professional athlete at the time. So I was like, universities will want me. And that was true. Like, I was talking to coaches in really great universities, but they were like, okay, like, just learn the language. That's all you're lacking. You need to pass the TOEFL exam, which is Test of English as a Foreign Language. So I came to the US for the language school. And then shortly after, I realized that, okay, if I go to college, I'll have to deal with immigration for so many years, but I already have good enough credentials to actually apply for immigration through extraordinary abilities, because I was in top 20 world ranking at the time, and usually America wants athletes to compete for America. So I applied. 4 months later, my green card got approved. And funny enough, I got scammed by an immigration attorney. I paid her $12,000 to process my case, and she just ghosted me. So that was like, man,
or fake lawyers. I'm not sure in this case, I guess.
I am yet to find out if she was fake lawyer or not. She got recommended by other fellow immigrant anyway. So that was like the beginning of Plan B Passport. I had to self-represent, and I was like, I'm kind of good at it. And I just, you know, went through the process myself, started helping other fellow immigrants to apply. They would self-represent themselves, and I would just guide them. And it was truly just me trying to, you know, get my paperwork done here in the U.S. And then shortly after, I always knew that I would be an entrepreneur. Like, growing up in the post-Soviet world, that was the only way to make it. I was raised to be an entrepreneur. Like, at the age of 9, I was starting my tiny little businesses, going to like a country music festival, selling little things. That's how I made my first $1,000 at the age of 9. And that's how I got my first sailboat to get into the state team. And then the next year I got into national team. So it's like the snowball of, I got a new boat. I was able to get in the state team. Then I got into national team. That national team actually got me a green card in the US afterwards. And it's just a butterfly effect, how a small wing of a butterfly causing a full typhoon on the other side of the world. Like, small little details in my life as a Russian child brought me here to be a Bitcoiner and selling passports for the last 6 years.
It's pretty wild. Just thinking of that journey. I mean, so when you had to self-represent, you had to basically go through all of these steps. And like, for those of us who, I did not really realize how difficult it was to both get into America. I mean, unless like you come across the southern border under Joe Biden, like, I didn't realize how difficult it is to come into America the right way until I met Carla and started learning about her experience and learning, you know, she was born in Romania. Her dad was a defector from communism there, because communism sucks, and made it over here. Like, eventually, but it was, I mean, she came over here when she was very young, just a couple of years old. And it took, I think, 13 or 14 years at least for her to become a citizen. And that was after her dad having been here for longer, her, you know, mom being here, that paying taxes out the ass. Like, you have to do a lot. It's not just, again, unless you're, you know, finding your way in under Joe Biden. But like, Americans don't understand it. Like, it is difficult to do things the right way. And I mean, I'm sure that has been your experience as well, given you had to self-represent right from the start.
Yeah. Well, American immigration, there is a lot of legal ways to get paperwork, to get everything in order in the US. But the department that manages all of it is honestly kind of a shit show. Was their operations, I mean, they're super backlogged. That's one thing. They're not leveraging technology enough. The people, regular clerks, have no idea what to do. But also, we had like such a crazy switch in the last election cycle. From one side of the policies is like, anybody who applies for political asylum, we take your application, you come live here, and maybe 10 years later, you will get to court to defend your application. So you have spent 10 years living here. To now saying, no, political asylum for very few things. And you can, like, not everybody can just come across the border and apply. So, and if you look what's happening now with ICE and this whole drama taking place in the US immigration, it's, we had 20 years of really weird policies that were keep going towards more free borders. And now we're slapping it and we're saying, no, this is not how it works. And we're trying to clean it up. And of course, there's lots of overshooting going on. And what I mean is, like, I mean, you can't clean up 20 years of policies and change them in 4 months without making mistakes. And mistakes are definitely being made. People are getting pissed. And yeah, like I mentioned, civil unrest is starting based on these issues right now. Because some people who are currently in legal status and have no criminal record somehow end up in ICE detention. So that's just raising lots of questions. And again, you can't make such big changes without making mistakes. So that's why we're already seeing the ambush on ICE facilities here in Texas just last week on 4th of July. We see something going on in Oregon along the same lines. In LA, Marines got deployed in the streets of LA to deal with the immigration issues. Well, immigration protests.
The protests, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the U.S. immigration is super interesting. It has really good policies, truly attracting capital and attracting talent. America is one of the biggest importer of talent from all around the world, and it's great. Like, that's what you want. That's one of the routes of sovereign individual playing out, right? But at the same time, the U.S. Immigration Department needs to be, man, and the USCIS and rebuild it. Okay. And the Fed also, and the USCIS. Yeah.
You know, it is pretty impressive. Like, America is obviously, like, if you came to America for most of America's history, it was a self-selector for high achieving, maybe a little bit crazy entrepreneurial risk takers. Like, that's what built America, was a bunch of people being like, I hate it over here in Europe or in, you know, whatever, wherever I am, England, Ireland, you know, it doesn't matter. I hate it here. This sucks. I want to go make something of myself because there's no opportunities for me to do that here. And you can do that. And that's self-selection for risk takers, for people that are going to be, again, not, they're breaking the mold usually, is what has made America so, so great. And, like, it should continue. Like, you want that to continue. You want to attract the best people to your country. And I think now that people are less tied than ever by needing to be in a physical location to do a job, let's say, like, you can work from a laptop anywhere in the world. Like, but ideally, as a country, you want somebody that's high achieving to be paying taxes in your country if they're raking in a bunch of money from other countries. So maybe we can like take a little step back. Can we talk about Plan B Passport? Obviously, your company is now acquired by CitizenX. You're part of CitizenX, but like that basic idea and something that you've talked about a lot as like having your Plan B, but also this flag theory. Can mm-hmm. you get into that a little bit? Like, what that means? Why should people care about that?
Yeah. Well, as somebody who was born, again, the post-Soviet country where the capital control is happening, seizure of assets is a normal Tuesday, and also that my passport doesn't get me anywhere in the world. I need to get a visa everywhere. Like, I was prepared to be this passport lady because I lived through all this painful experiences. But what flag theory for me is basically limiting your dependency on any one particular state. Right? We're trying to take control back by self-custodying. We are taking assets away from a centralized entity and educating ourselves on how we can have this radical ownership. Well, same goes for your citizenship. If you're born in one country, you only have one citizenship. The country basically has monopoly over you. And only 3% of people actually live outside of the country of their birth, which makes it 97% monopoly over you. And just this amount of dependency we have on our home country is painful because three-letter agency targeting you directly, you have nothing to do. A 6102 on Bitcoin, you have nothing to do. Civil unrest, you have nowhere to go. Or your country gets involved in a geopolitical instability and decides to go to war and you don't sign up for it. Well, what else are you going to do? So just having this another country to call home is just your geopolitical hedge against your home country's government, against government overreach, etc. So that's how I started Plan B Passport. I was already a Bitcoiner, and I just kept talking how everybody needs a second passport. I did not have a company. I was not selling anything. I was just truly passionate about the fact that you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You can't have one citizenship as a Bitcoiner. You must have a hedge in place. So I kept talking about it on Twitter for like a year and a half, and people kept asking questions. And at this point, I was already pretty educated on what the world has to offer on a capitalist basis, like pay-to-play citizenship. So I just kept telling people what where to go, what to do. And I realized that I have some audience, I have expertise, and I just started Plan B Passport.
I mean, it's something that I think a lot of Americans, maybe myself included, don't think of a lot, this needing to have this optionality, because again, we're born with a strong passport, like, yeah. You know, like this arguably, you know, and you could probably debate this because you know a lot more about passports than I do, but like the strongest passport in the world, or at least one of them, like, or it has been for a very long time. Like, everybody wants that American passport. It's why people flock here in droves. That is not the case for much of the world. Like, you were born with a weak passport. Like, many people are born with a weak passport. And so I think, you know, it's hard for Americans to wrap their mind around the fact that, like, oh yeah, you, as an American, you don't need visas to go most places. Most other countries in the world, like, if you want to come to America, you need a visa. You want to go a lot of places, you need a visa. Like, it's not as easy as just, like, you know, showing up, here's my American passport, let me into your country. Thank you very much, sir. Like, it's just not the case.
Let's talk about using Bitcoin the way it's meant to be used. Self-custodial, lightning fast, and ready for the real world. That's exactly what BitKit Wallet is all about. BitKit Wallet is a clean, powerful Bitcoin and Lightning mobile wallet that gives you full control on-chain and on Lightning. You hold the keys always. Whether you're brand new or are a seasoned Bitcoiner, BitKit's intuitive wallet design makes it simple to send, receive, and manage your sats. QuickPay lets you fire off Lightning payments faster than ever, and seamless integration between on-chain and Lightning means your funds are always where you need them. It's your daily driver Bitcoin and Lightning wallet, and it actually feels good to use it. And with modular widgets, you can personalize your experience to match your style. There's even a Lightning node running right on your phone. No custodians, no compromises. Go to bitkit.to or search BitKit Wallet in your app store and start using Bitcoin like it's meant to be used. That's BITKIT.to.
I got rejected on a U.S. visa prior to coming here. I got rejected and then I had to reapply, and it takes $400 and 4 weeks of wait and an interview and providing your financial information like bank statements and buying tickets, showing them the return tickets. Yeah, it's a whole process. It's a due diligence on you for sure. And I've read on Twitter recently that you had 17% chance of being born in India, which is very weak passport, very weak passport. So yeah. Your chances to be born with one of the most desirable passports in the world, in one of the most still most desirable locations in the world, are not that big. And that's why you probably never thought about hedging against your home country government, because you had it good for a very long time. This was the place to go. This is where the entire world was immigrating to, the country of immigrants, for a reason. The ambitious people come to the U.S., and it is still the case. Like, in 2025, it's still a very desirable location. And most of my clients do not relocate from America. They stay here. They enjoy their lifestyle, but they're hedging. They're just making sure that there is a plan B in place for their entire family. They either acquire it through investment, or they acquire it through, let's say, you have some ancestral ties to Europe. Like, your children can still get Romanian citizenship through Carla, right? And sometimes it can go 2-3 generations down, which people utilize this option. Like, you have great grandparents from Poland, go get Polish citizenship just to hedge.
Let's see if I fixed it.
I think I did. Yeah. Can you still hear
me?
The
sound is much better.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is what happens when I don't have a producer. I don't have somebody to check to be like, hey, you are on the wrong microphone. So now we're better. But yeah, so I mean, it's tough. I think people also, there's this feeling that like, okay, getting another passport is like out of reach for me. Like this is something that like only people who have $5 million or, you know, exceptional ability. I don't even know if they still are doing that one in the US. Maybe you can talk about that as well. But like this feeling like, oh, come on. Like I can't possibly be able to afford that. I don't have 5 million or a couple million lying around, but there are other paths to this, right? So can you maybe talk about like, maybe just like, how do you go through this with clients? Like, what do you look for? What kind of questions do you ask? What kind of questions should people ask themselves maybe to figure out what reasonable options do I have? Maybe some people do have that. I mean, a lot of people have a lot of money. So and Bitcoiners increasingly more so, right? But maybe they don't have a couple million to blow on something. What other questions, what other options are out there? How can people go about this?
Yeah. So I always say flat theory is a security model. So when you come up with your Bitcoin security, you consider what are the tools out there, right? You look into, there is a cold card, there's foundation device, there is a paper wallet, there is a seed plate, and you just play around your attack vectors, what you are willing to spend on your security model, what you actually need, what are your goals, etc. Do you need an inheritance plan? And then you customize this model. So same goes for your needs and attack vectors when you consider your flag theory. So of course, it does depend on your net worth, right? Because there's a handful of countries that offer citizenship through investment, and only citizenship by investment truly allows you pick and choose citizenship in under a year, right? Because that's true capitalism applied to nation state services. So that we're talking about countries like Serbia, Caribbean offshore jurisdictions, El Salvador, Argentina is launching in a couple months. So Turkey would be another one. And you can actually pick and choose considering what are your geopolitical risks, what's your home country government, etc. Now, if like that, we're talking about $300,000 average check or so. I'd even say even more so, closer to 400 on average.
And is that for like either investment or in those cases, like direct payment, like to that government in question?
Depends on the jurisdiction. So with Turkey, okay. You buy real estate, 400,000 euro worth of it. With Caribbean islands, it's mostly donation. El Salvador, $1 million donation. So depending on the country. And by the way, I'm talking about like a family offering, right? So it's not that per family member. It's you do one donation, and under this one donation, you can qualify main applicant, spouse, children under 30 years old in some cases if they're unmarried, your parents who are 55 years old plus, so like three generations can go under the same donation. So big families apply together quite often. And then again, depending on jurisdiction, you can consider who can be dependent. But then what else do you have in your flag theory toolbox? You have citizenship by descent. You can't choose because that depends on where your ancestors are coming from. But most countries in Latin America will allow you to get citizenship if your grandparents were born there. A lot of countries in Europe, almost all of them will allow you to get citizenship if it was parent or grandparent. Some jurisdiction will go back as far as four generations, as long as the lineage has not been broken. So we do genealogical research on behalf of our clients to know all the life facts, like when they moved to the US, when the naturalization happens, when the marriage happened, to consider if they qualify for the citizenship by descent. Of course, on top of it, we have actual relocation and naturalization, right? So just like I moved to the US, got my permanent residency, and then will get my citizenship. You could move, let's say, to Mexico tomorrow, get yourself residency based on financial solvency and based on showing your income from abroad. They will welcome you as a resident because you're earning money elsewhere and bringing it to Mexico. And then after 5 years of being a resident and spending some time there in the last two, you will be able to apply for naturalization and become a citizen of Mexico too. And that works also for the majority of the world. So as long as you legally move to the country, usually spend 5 years there, you are able to apply for citizenship. So there are many routes that will allow you to get citizenship. And just like for me, I used citizenship through exception, basically, right? Or like based on my skills. Skill-based immigration is one of my favorite topics as well. Because
do podcasters qualify for that, or is that usually not the case?
Some jurisdictions they do, like UAE. Wow. Like,
really?
Yeah, go to Dubai, you will probably be able to get the residency there based on your media appearances.
Wow, I was halfway joking, but good to know. Okay.
Yep. So it is very interesting, and citizenship by investment is a true capitalism applied to nation state services, right? And like this pair of Bitcoin plus citizenship through investment is truly the union of sovereign individual, because now we have the money that can be moved across borders very easily. And we have individuals who are willing to cross borders for better life. And by better life, I also mean things like lower taxes, better regulatory environment, free speech, and things like that. So now, with their lack of ability to control the capital, because we can move across borders with 12 words in our head, they actually have to start competing, not just preventing us from leaving, not just gatekeeping the capital. They actually have to start competing for the fruits of our labor, for our capital. And that's what we're seeing happening right now. Like El Salvador just turning around the country and saying, hey, we are actually pro-economic freedom. We're going to say zero corporate tax for 10 years. Of course, we're going to see Google and NVIDIA and Tether moving to El Salvador, because you open the doors for businesses, you let them build, they come and build. We're going to say you can come and be a citizen of El Salvador, and we are actually taking a strong stand against whatever bullshit is happening in Europe. Well, come be a citizen for 9 Bitcoins. And that's how they're going to stack. They're attracting capital, they're attracting citizens, and people are paying the price for that. And that's how I see the nation state race for stacking Bitcoin that will evolve. Like right now we see public companies issuing shares to buy Bitcoin. Well, El Salvador can't issue US dollars to buy Bitcoin. They don't have access to money printer, just like most of the world doesn't have access to money printer because their currency is already very weak. The US dollar is getting weaker by the day. So they can't just print money to buy Bitcoin. They have to provide some value and they have to bring in capital. What is the one asset they can issue in order to buy Bitcoin? Well, that's a citizenship. So we see El Salvador being the first country in Latin America launching the citizenship by investment program. And now we see Argentina saying that they are going to launch a citizenship program too. So this is a true sovereign individual thesis playing out. The end of nation states, the true capitalism applied to government services. Come, bring your capital, pay-to-play citizenship, use our nation state services, pay zero capital gains taxes on Bitcoin, pay zero corporate taxes, and here we are. That's how this competition starts.
It definitely is like the very much the sovereign individual. Sovereign individual thesis. It also reminds me, have you read the book Snow Crash?
No, I have not read that.
It's outstanding. I think you would enjoy it for this perspective as well. It's a classic. It's basically the author like invented the term the metaverse, like before metaverse was all shitcoiny. Like this was back in like the 80s, I think he wrote this. But one of the concepts in there is that basically the nation state is gone. Like the U.S. government is like a couple of blocks. It's like one tiny little thing. And then like that's the United States of America is like this tiny little suburb basically. And then the rest of it is just all these basically nation state corporations. They're offering services like, and if you want to pay more, you get better services, you know, like these crazy robot guard dogs that will, you know, destroy people on your behalf. So like it's very and he paints it in a somewhat like dystopian lens, but I don't think it necessarily has to go that way. Like governments should be service providers. That should be like if you're paying taxes, you should be getting some services out of that. It shouldn't just be like, you know, let me just take 40% or 50% of everything you earn at the point of kind of a hidden gun. And to the people who say like, well, they're not actually confiscating your money under the threat of violence. It's like, try not paying your taxes And then try resisting arrest when the armed IRS agents come to your house to arrest you. They will shoot you and then you will die. And so it's like that it only takes a couple of hops to get in a very bad situation. And I'm kind of curious, you know, are the majority of your clients, I mean, if you can like talk about this, but like, do you have most of your clients that are like Americans looking for second or third or fourth passports elsewhere? Or is it people from all over? I mean, like, where is your biggest customer base from as their mother country?
100% America. I mean, okay. I'm not saying 100%, but like the majority is definitely America. I would say 60 to 70% Americans. And the number was higher until the Canadian election. Now Canadians are taking a big chunk of the pie. And then the rest is just usually some Europeans and some people with very weak passports like Nepal, India, etc. But yeah, Americans are definitely top of the list. Partially because my content is in English. I'm an American myself. The distribution channels are usually towards Americans. But also if you look at the statistics of the Caribbean islands, Americans has been like really, really growing audience, really growing purchasing chunk of the pie over the last 8 years. So,
okay. And in terms of, so you mentioned the Caribbean islands, is that kind of a go-to place for a lot of Americans? Can you talk at all about like, because obviously you can, there's a lot of options to choose from. Some are better than others. How do you go about that process? I mean, let's say from the citizenship by investment lens, where basically you have the capital, you can take your, you know, you're not worried about the ancestry or whatever. You just, you have money and you want to be able to go anywhere. How do you pick what is going to be best or which ones are best or like, how do you think about that?
You have to keep track of the current geopolitical environment, as well as you have to understand your attacks and threats, right? Attack vectors and threats. Caribbean island is just easy go-to for a true Plan B passport that is truly just a hedge in case of emergency. You're not expecting this emergency to take place. You are not considering this the very specific path where the emergency is going to come from. You just civil unrest, geopolitical instability, offshore jurisdiction, 2 hours flight from Miami, you get St. Kitts Antigua passport, you're good. 300 grand for your entire family. In under a year, you get the citizenship. Now, if we start looking into what's happening in the geopolitics, there are two parts of the world that I'm truly bullish on. It's Balkans and Latin America right now, simply because they don't seem to cut into the, like, get into this whole agenda of the surveillance is for your safety, all that, you know, like they just live their lives. They truly, and both of them still have this anti-socialism, antibodies in their DNA because they've tried it quite recently in the last two generations. They know where it leads. So they're not taking that route. So from these countries, what options do I have? We have Serbia, citizenship through exception, going to end up around 400,000 euro for you spouse and kids under 18, or El Salvador that is taking a strong stand in their freedom, economic freedom, and individual freedom kind of stand. So that's $1 million for you spouse and kids under 18. Now we also have Turkey. And with Turkey, it's like a layer of cultural and religious protection there. So if you think that you are part of a group that will specifically be targeted by U.S. government because of your cultural belief, Turkey probably could be a good hedge for you. So usually we just brainstorm together with the client just like that. Consider the net worth, consider what amount of money you're willing to spend. What's your timeline? Like, do you need passport in 2 months? Well, you have one option, which is El Salvador. Do you
they
need
can
passport?
Move that quickly.
They can, their due diligence, like they leverage technology. They're,
wow.
They're the most advanced citizenship program in the world right now because they can get you a citizenship in 2 months while Caribbean islands, 12 months right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. That just blew my mind that like any government could move that fast.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, in Sovereign Individual, they say the smaller nation states will be the first one to get into this game because They operate like a startup. It's not a giant machine like in the US. I predicted the launch of the Trump card. Like, out of blue, I decided to tweet. I never tweet predictions for immigration world. I just said EB-5 investment-based program will be shut down because it's full of fraud. There will be a new program that is going to cost $5 million, straight pass to citizenship if you want, in under 6 months. And I just tweeted it, and some immigration professionals, specifically lawyer-type people, were like, Katie, this will never happen. Well, 2 weeks later, Trump announces the gold card or a Trump card with precisely $5 million price check, straight pass to citizenship if you want, under 6 months. And I was like, I have receipts, motherfuckers. You look through your lawyer lens into your paperwork while I shit post on Twitter, and I actually understand the trends that are taking place in the world. So, but it's been what? They've been saying 2 weeks until gold card, and it's been months because they have to go through this entire regulatory machine that barely moves. So yeah, that's much, much tougher task.
So, okay, so those are some of the options as far as like, as far as investment goes. What about some of this, like the ancestor, citizenship by descent or ancestry, or however it's classified? Like, are there actually still like fairly easy, or not easy, are there a number of ways that you can do that depending on like, you know, if you gave your DNA to 23andMe, for example, which, you know, maybe it might have been a bad idea. But like, can you like take that report to a certain country, or do you need to have like some sort of genealogy? Like you need to go to the local record, you know, get the local records and stuff. Like how deep does that go?
Gotta be a paper trail. So okay. It's not based on DNA. We actually collect your birth certificate, your passport, right? Your ancestor in line, which is the ancestor that connects you from you to the anchor ancestor born in the country. For this person, we need birth certificate, marriage certificate, death certificate, if applicable. For the next ancestor in line, same things. And for the anchor ancestor, the person who was born in another country, birth records, travel records to the U.S., naturalization records in the U.S. or Canada. And we show this entire paper trail. So that's a bureaucratic nightmare because, like, think about early 1900s or end of 1800s. Like, there was no digital records of anything. There still barely exists. And you have to go into local archives or sometimes local church to find those records. So we try to make it as white glove service as possible. But it is a complete bureaucratic nightmare. So it may take up to 3 years. And we may be 100% sure that you qualify, and then spend 8 months going through every archival record in the entire country and still not find records of your ancestors simply because, let's say, they were Jewish and they burned everything because they were afraid of Nazis. So it's difficult. If you qualify, you must try to get that citizenship. Like, it's a no-brainer. Citizenship through descent must be approached by everybody who is qualified. Because it's a very strong passport. It's not citizenship through investment. It's going to cost you around $20,000-$25,000. But you just have to do that, because then you can also keep this nationality running in your family for your kids, for your grandkids, and just keep passing it down next generations. That's a legacy. I see citizenship as a very strong new asset class. And guess what? There's no inheritance tax on citizenship. So keep passing it down as your legacy.
Do you still have to like take, you know, like language and history tests for a descent based passport or citizenship?
Very few countries require it. Like Hungary would be one of them. Slovenia would be another one. But other countries do not require language exam. Citizenship through descent is just You're going through a path of claiming something that you're already eligible for, right? Basically, in most of the scenarios, they say that you were born Italian, you just never claimed it. And sometimes I will like talk to a French consulate and be like, "Hey, my grandfather was born in France. I just want to clarify that I qualify. Can I apply for my French citizenship?" And then the French manner that will come back and tell me, you're either born French or you're not born French. There is not qualifying or applying for it. And I'm like, thank you for being helpful, Mr. Consular Clerk. Like, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But
French. That reminds me of an interesting like saying that my father-in-law, who again escaped communism and came to America, said. He was like, Walker, America is very unique because if you go to, he actually used the examples of France and Russia. So, you go to France, you can become a citizen, you can pay your taxes, you can marry a French woman, you'll never be French. You can go to Russia, you can, become a citizen, you can pay your taxes, live there for your whole life, you'll never be Russian. But you come to America, you become a citizen, you pay your taxes, you're American. And like, that's a very, very unique thing. And that just like, first time he said that, I was just like, oh, damn. Like it's true, but like, yeah, you'll never be French. You're either French or you're not. There's no in between.
Yeah, no, definitely. I feel quite American these days. I haven't spoken a word of English 9 years ago, and now I feel like I closed my cultural gap. I feel home. I have a family here. Definitely feel American in many ways.
I mean, you are American, and so let me ask you about that. So you're, I think you've been public about what city you live in, right?
Yeah, I'm in Austin, Texas.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to dox something. So in great Bitcoiner city, from what I know. And, like of all the places, like now presumably you have a number of passports yourself. You practice what you preach in terms of flag theory.
You bet.
You could go to a lot of places. You choose Austin, Texas in the United States of America. Why? And, let's start with why. Then my next question would be, what's kind of your biggest fear? That makes you want to have that Plan B passport that, to be able to engage in that flag theory? Like, what's your biggest fear for America that like would cause you to need to like, I need to get the fuck out of here?
Yeah. Well, between me and my husband, we can literally leave anywhere in the world, like because we have other citizenships, but we also have a skill set that is welcomed in most of the world. We also are able to move with capital, which is welcomed in most of the world. And I have all the knowledge to move to literally any country out there. So it is very precise choice for us to live in the U.S. and to specifically be in Austin, Texas. Some of this is family-based. None of this is career-based, honestly, because, yes, I do like to hang out with Bitcoiners, but we both work remotely from home. So that is not the reason. But I found the perfect tribe. And you know how I was talking about the toolkit of flag theory? Tribe is another instrument in a toolkit that I really value. Like being surrounded by the community of individuals that have the same principles and values is really important for me, partially because I'm having kids. I need to make sure that my kids hang out with kids of other parents who are on the same page. I don't want to like go to friend's house and catch my kid eating absolute junk everywhere and just being exposed to all kinds of chemicals. Like there are certain things that I want for my children and I need to also make, and for myself. So I need to make sure that I'm surrounded by a very similar people. And I have beautiful sisterhood here. Literally every single friend in my friend group is currently pregnant. So we're all on the same stage of life. That's been beautiful. Our husbands are all into Bitcoin and smoking cigars together. Our kids are all the same age, and that's been definitely beautiful. Weather-wise, well, we travel. So for the majority of the year, we love the climate here. We love being able to get sun exposure daily. We get lots of that. It's a lot of thinking went into that. To choose Austin, Texas. And right now, it gave me everything I need. Good alternative medical system with home birthing. Good traditional medical system because I do have a child with medical needs. Good Bitcoiner community to be exposed to great people and for our kids to hang out together and then be homeschooled together later on. Near proximity to my in-laws. They've been great. They moved. I was really blessed with my in-laws, and they recently moved to Austin, Texas as well. And just, I don't know, we put a lot of thought into that, and we ended up in Austin, Texas.
I mean, you certainly sell it pretty well. So then with that, what is your kind of biggest fear? Like, obviously you immigrated from a country that has gone through some extreme fucking shit. Not that there hasn't been extreme shit here, but the U.S. has been we didn't have an Iron Curtain come down. You know what I mean? So like, it's a different level. So what is your biggest fear, I guess, living here now in America, loving where you're at? What would cause you to leave? What do you fear?
Zero tolerance to violence directed, like actually being near my family. So civil unrest starts happening, I have no place in it. Geopolitical instability. I am not part of the vote harder group. I'm not part of the I'm going to stay and fight for their principles. No, I have my own principles for my family. I'm not willing to take part of in their war, because I do believe that every war in the world started not by citizens, but by the elites forcing citizens to go and put their blood on the line. Zero interest. And then 6102 on Bitcoin, we have all this SBR starting everywhere. Well, what if one day American government decides that they've gotten pretty good at custodying Bitcoin? How about they custody it for all the citizens now?
For our safety, of course.
Yeah, for our safety, of course. So zero tolerance for this capital control. But I'm also in Texas, which means that if airports are closed, things are shut down, I'm near border. I drive down the border. I get on a damn sailboat in Galveston and I sail down, and nobody can stop me because I can do that. So the strategic positioning of being not landlocked and just being able to get out has also been important to me. That's why I've been mostly between Florida and Texas.
Okay. No, I mean, given that you are a sailor, that's a pretty smart move to be. It's a good strategic positioning, let's say. No, I'm with you on that, and specifically just here on the, you know, wars are not started by individuals. Individuals cannot wage war against each other. Individuals can fight. They can't wage war. War is waged by the state on behalf of elites. War is not waged on behalf of individuals. Individuals, are the ones who go and are snuffed out in those wars. And so that is just truly a shame. Unfortunately, I don't think we're getting away from war anytime soon, because it's just so good for business. It's sad. I think that America is still I think that America's best days are still ahead of it. Like, I think that America, because especially in these rising generations, people are sick and tired of these forever wars. They're sick and tired of the 80-year-old politicians who just won't get out of office and won't drop dead already, or at least just go retire and enjoy all of your insider training, trading profits that you've been making all these years, Nancy Pelosi.
Touch some grass.
Seriously. Yeah. Like, go spend time with your great grandkids, which you have already, because you're that ancient, you sick old fucks.
Yeah.
But like, people are tired of that and they want something different. So I think that there's a shift coming. We're also at this point right now where we're in the middle of a fourth turning, obviously.
Yeah.
We're also, I would argue, at this descending into this oglocracy stage or mob rule stage of this cycle theory called anacyclosis. And we're also at the end of a long-term debt cycle, if we want to go Ray Dalio's way. And we're also at the end of a fiat currency cycle, if we want to go into that. And so many things are cyclically converging right now. And it may not be pretty for a little while. And that's the thing. I think America's best days are ahead, but it's also in the short term, things could get really, really gnarly. Like, the old system's not going to go down without a fight, and things could get really bad. So, that's kind of my fear as well. It's not the long term. Long term, I think America is going to be better than ever. It's going to take some time, though, and it's not going to be good in the short term. I don't know if that's the vibe you have as well.
Yeah. bullish, but there might be a bear market, right?
Right. Yeah.
So
big drawdown.
The cool thing is, I always say, be a prepper, not a doomer, right? Like, we see all this things that are sad to imagine. Like, we know things are playing out in front of our eyes, and like the black swan things are taking place. But the great thing is we recognize it early on and we put hedges in places. We already hedged very well against fiat system just collapsing. We are also hedged with our passports against civil unrest, political instability. We got citizenships. We all are in great health. We really make sure that we can survive things for longer than others. We took care of that. We just focused on beautiful things. We are raising families. We are investing in those families while the world might have gone to shit at some point, but we have the beautiful things. So be a prepper, not a doomer. Put hedges in place. Buy yourself rice and beef and passports and guns and Bitcoin, and the world is beautiful again, because you don't have to be worried about all this doomsday kind of scenario.
I like that very much. That's put that on a t-shirt or something. That's a good words to live by. I'm curious how you see, we touched a little bit earlier just on that sovereign individual thesis and people, voting with their feet, but voting with their capital as well. And I'm kind of curious, you mentioned, these smaller nations, obviously they have that sort of startup agility. They can move more quickly than the big behemoths. That's a huge advantage. It creates, the game theory gets very interesting because, again, these small nations are incentivized to do that more and more so. This big slow ones try to catch up. But I'm curious kind of how you see this playing out, The difficulty is to what we were just mentioning in terms of like short-term instability in the U.S. If that's happening in the U.S., it's probably happening in Europe. It's probably happening in most of the world. So how do you hedge against, does that just come down to stack as many passports as you can and see which nation isn't burning? Like when the shit hits the fan, like, is that the only thing you can do?
Stack strategically, recognizing the trends in the geopolitics. Like right now, we see European Union is fighting hard against citizenship by investment programs. They come up with all kinds of different reasons, but the reality is they don't want people to be able to pick and choose where they go. So the ECJ, which is like a European Court of Justice, just shut down Malta's citizenship by investment program. They're working hard on shutting down Caribbean citizenship by investment program. They don't like that their citizens can shop around for a new jurisdiction. So it's kind of bearish for the industry. But in my view, Europe has no power. Like, they're running on their legacy power that half the world already doesn't believe in. They're going full on socialist, completely walking towards poverty, and everybody knows that. So for how long they have any power, if anything, yet to hold. So I recognize that while they still have some leverage to those smaller nations to come and stop their citizenship program, this will take turn very quickly. Like, we start seeing new nation states showing up on citizenship by investment list, and it's gradually then suddenly. And that's one of the reasons I really want to see Trump card come into fruition, because if America, the very strong nation of the world, can just say, hey, there is a citizenship for sale here, well, it will be a green light for many smaller nations to go and do that. And then it's just game theory playing out in front of our eyes, taking care of everything. The smaller nations want that chunk of money too. They need it. They will start providing better services. They will start attracting you with better taxes, and they will start selling you citizenship. So because of this European pressure to all the CBI countries, I am bearish very short term on the CBI world, citizenship by investment world, but I'm incredibly bullish because I know it's gradually then suddenly. And I already see this post-winter flowers come into places. And at some point, the snow will melt and the garden will be beautiful. And that's what I'm seeing.
So the EU is actively trying to stop EU citizens from being able to get citizenship by investment in non-EU countries.
Yeah.
Man, that's, I mean, they're trying to close the doors to prevent capital flight is what they're trying to do.
I mean, there is Citizen X. You can just Google Citizen X capital exodus. And we have this life map of wealth migration. And you can see the UK is number two loser of capital right now. This is absolutely crazy to see. The millionaires are leaving the UK at super high rates. Same is happening in other jurisdictions. And I mean, they can try to prevent whatever, but again, you can't stop this. Like you can't stop this train, as Lynn Alden would say.
I wanted to pull up this map here for folks to check out if they're for those watching. This is, I mean, yeah. So right there, wow. So UK is what, $131.9 billion of capital flight so far.
Yeah,
is that what's the time scale on this? Is that just in the last year, or is that like they're looking at total?
Let me see. Oh,
that's year to date. Wow.
Yep.
Wow. That is insane.
Yeah, it's 250 in 1 year and 430 in 3 years. So yeah, it's
wow.
It's been said to be the UK over the last few years. And the wealthy are always the canary in the coal mine. They're mm-hmm. the ones who are able to execute fast, who have access to all the best consultants in the world and ready to execute. So if we see it within millionaire crowd, well, the middle class is next. Well, right now the middle class is paying for all that.
That is just like, that's nuts. I mean, to see, especially in the UK, it's like, I know they have their government is looking at all the migration to UAE as a huge issue for them, because that's kind of like the trend that they're seeing over there is, you know, out of the UK into the UAE. UAE is obviously getting a lot of people coming from all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, this is just like, it's like, what do you expect? Like, what do you expect when you create a socialist verging on communist totalitarian temptation dynamic in your nation where you don't allow people to speak freely, where you take the fruits of their labor and spend it on stupid fucking shit, where you treat them like criminals in their own country while letting the actual criminals roam free? It's like, what do you expect, you morons? Of course people are going to leave. You're doing a terrible job running the country. Obviously they're going to leave. If a business is serving you dog shit food, you're not just going to keep eating it, and you're certainly not going to pay for it. You're going to leave. Like, this isn't complicated.
It's like we have 300 years of a complete proof that economic freedom leads to economic prosperity. And yet we go back to socialist agenda. We go back to hating rich people. Today I commented on Peter McCormack's post. He's saying being rich is good. That we should literally praise those people, thanking them for, you know, bringing value, building value. And there is this German economist. I actually follow him on Twitter. I don't know why he's never done a round of Bitcoin podcasts. I truly hope he's a Bitcoiner, because he's there. And he actually wrote a great book on how Vietnam and Poland got out of poverty. And in this book, he also says, only the countries that have a positive attitude towards wealth and towards rich people can actually get out of poverty and move towards economic prosperity. So we have to see being rich, being prosperous, being wealthy as a good thing. But then we have this entire leftist agenda saying, tugs the rich are bad, they're the ones causing problem, but they're the ones paying the most taxes. What are you talking about? And you're just wasting it over here. So economic freedom leads to economic prosperity. You let people build, you let people keep their money, they actually start building and making money. So you can like see it in the power dynamics of the world and just track it. And yet here comes the UK and just says, oh, let's raise taxes. Oh, we hate rich people.
it's just not going to go well. Like, it's one of those things where it's like again, as you said, we've got 300 years of proof that like capitalism is not only great for people inside a capitalist nation, but like there's a great quote by a guy, Jean-François Ravel. He wrote The Totalitarian Temptation. And it's like paraphrasing, but one often wonders what would become of socialism if capitalism was not there to support it, like, which is, you know, just amazing. Socialists hate to acknowledge that it's, you know, the book, well, look at Sweden and Norway. They're basically, and it's like, okay, you're just not even worth my time. But yeah. like socialism and communism just don't work. And it's not that you haven't done it right. It's that you've done it right every time. You've done it exactly like how you're supposed to. It's just that it doesn't work because it's a very bad way. Like, it is anti-human to treat people like that. And people die in the millions.
Absolute misincentive right there, right away for everybody. Every ambitious person is not going to exercise their ambitions if it doesn't lead anywhere. What's the point? Why would I keep putting the work if we're under socialism? So, yeah, just lack of incentive will stop the progress. And that's so clear to me. But I was born in the post-Soviet country. So if you look at all the Bitcoin girls on Twitter, half of us from like Eastern Europe. And I think it's because we have this antibodies for socialism.
Yep. I mean, yeah, like off the top of my head, you, Carla, Natalie, like, and many, like the list goes on and on. But like, that's the thing I've had guys ask me before, like, oh, how do I like get my wife or get my girlfriend into Bitcoin? I'm like, I'm the wrong person to ask because we kind of got into it at the same time. And it's because she's super based and came from Eastern Europe and is like, hey, communism sucks. You shouldn't have communism when it comes to your money. And like, you should be able to do whatever you want. And like, so you're just like Eastern Bloc women are just prepared for Bitcoin. Yeah. Like you're ready for Bitcoin. You don't need to be explained to why totalitarianism is bad because like you've lived it and your family has lived it. Like
100%.
It's self-evident.
Yeah. The moment we learn enough about Bitcoin, we got it. Like you just did just enough to get there. And it's not as clear for the Western world for sure. Just because you haven't lived through those experiences. But at the same time, the content is in English, and that's why America is very much leading the Bitcoin adoption. So you guys are seeing through that too.
Yeah. Thankfully, step by step, paso a paso, as they'd say in El Salvador. This is just like a logistical question. Is there any limit to how many passports you can have?
There are some jurisdictions that don't allow dual citizenship, for example, India. China. But other than that, no, there's no limit. You can have
so like as a U.S. citizen, you can just stack as many as you want, essentially.
Keep stacking, yeah.
That's kind of wild. I feel like that's maybe not super well known. Like for a while, I thought that like U.S. citizens like couldn't have dual citizenship in some cases, but like there's no restrictions on that if you're U.S., right?
No, absolutely no restrictions.
That is wild. What is your, besides the U.S. passport, what is your, like, the, you know, gold standard or the Bitcoin standard of passports in your mind?
I would always, like, if I didn't have my passports, right, like, if I was to completely just pinpoint right now in 2025, I would definitely want Serbia. Because it's Schengen, but outside of EU, or like any of the countries that is like Balkans that are still Schengen, but outside of EU. Then actually Canadian, probably instead of American, because America has citizenship-based taxation, Canada doesn't.
Really?
Then, yeah, you can actually not pay Canadian anything or file in Canada once you break up with Canada, which is not that hard. Then I would get the Latin American, but some of the based Latin American. So it would be El Salvador, my number one right now, Argentina or Paraguay. That's probably already pretty good triangle.
Yeah, that's a nice stack already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so like, okay, El Salvador moves fast with these other countries. It's like a year. Do you have people coming to you who are like, I need another passport, like tomorrow? Like, does that happen a decent amount, or are people, you like, yeah, are we at this point where people are planning ahead? Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
The one time that I had a client like this, he ended up like ghosting me. And later when the due diligence came back, I realized why he ghosted me, because he was in jail. And he just forgot to mention to me a few things, but now it makes sense why he was in such a rush.
Okay.
So yeah, if you need it tomorrow, well, that's a good thing to mention. It's like, you want it before you need it, because when you need it, it's too late. So that's why people just execute without this like pressuring need. Because under pressuring need, you might not pass the due diligence and you might not be able to get that citizenship anymore. So get it before you need it, just like, you know, the gun. You need it right now, or you don't. If you don't have it, you don't. It's too late, basically. So same goes for every security model. And if you really need it, it's too late, probably.
Do you think, like, looking long term into the future, if this sovereign individual thesis keeps playing out, if we are seeing nation states, you know, really striving to operate more as service providers, right, to really make sure you're getting the most out of whatever money you're spending there, do you think is that something where it's going to be basically impossible for nations to get away with charging ridiculous taxes? Like the EU is not going to be able to do what it currently does, because people, I mean, unless they trap their citizens there and make it impossible for them to leave, it won't even be feasible anymore. Like, those nation states will just perish. Like, the sovereign individual thesis will just play out, and it'll be the end of that, the nation state as we know it today.
Yeah, just imagine like a subscription-based model, right? Like, you have 5 different streaming platforms, and for some reason you're willing to pay for Apple TV more than you pay for Netflix and Prime and this and that, because there is severance. So there's an incentive for you to pay for Apple TV that is higher than for others, and you're willing to pay that higher price. So it's the microstate system will have similar to subscription model, and once you're unhappy or the streaming platform doesn't provide you with what you need, you unsubscribe. You break up with that platform and you go find better nation state service provider at a better price. We already have decentralized money that is outside of any government's control. The other thing is monopoly on violence, right? But the violence is getting decentralized as well with the technology and drones and everything. So anybody has access to pretty violent defense and offense these days, and it's only going to get more decentralized. That will basically allow microstates to exist, to protect themselves and to welcome citizens. And in a microstate world, yeah, it's just subscription based. And once you have this free market competition, it's much easier to price your services, right? Because you get to compare. And if you don't have gatekeepers, then the free market competition just evolves. But in our scenario, we have the money that doesn't allow gatekeepers to exist, because we can bring the 12 forts with us. So now it's just the game theory of them realizing that they have to compete.
Do you think the nation state itself ends up like, you know, goes into this micro state kind of situation where they're forced to get smaller and smaller and smaller, and to then, even though they're small, but then they can actually provide for their citizens in a meaningful way? Is that how you see that transpiring?
Yeah, and let's see what happens with Alberta in the next 360 days.
Yeah, that is okay. So, what's your read on that? Because the Canadians I talked to, like, I didn't know actually a ton of Canadians. Like, I could count them on one hand before Bitcoin. Then I get into Bitcoin, and I've met more based Canadians than I could ever imagine. Like, just I had no idea Canada was full of so many based people. But yep. Maybe it's just, you know, it's a lot of the Bitcoiners,
and they're all in Alberta.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, okay, what's your read at what's going on there? Like, it seems like people in Alberta are pretty pissed because they basically, you know, are supplying the energy for, you know, most of the rest of the country and still get shafted for it. But like, do you think that's actually something that's going to move quickly?
Yeah. For the 6 weeks after the Canadian elections, I was just talking to Canadians all day long. They expect capital control. They expect full surveillance state, and Alberta, well, those based from outside of Alberta are literally moving to Alberta in case Alberta's exodus actually happens. And that's what I advise them to do as well, because in case of exodus, you want to be the citizen of Alberta. You will keep your Canadian citizenship because you were born with that. Now you get an Alberta citizenship too, and you get to actually choose where you want to be. At the beginning, I wasn't believing that would actually happen. But now I'm starting to think it's very possible, partially because Alberta is so independent in terms of their earnings, right? Their balance sheet, their budget. Just like Texas. Texas is net positive in terms of their budget. So I think it may actually take place. Let's see. It'll be interesting to see. I definitely wanted to go in a nonviolent way, which means that the U.S. won't necessarily step in. There will be more of a monetary agreement. But let's see how it plays out.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of momentum for it. And, you know, you can only push people so far before they just say, you know, I'm not doing this anymore. Like I've had enough of this. We're sick of your fiat games. Katie, is there anything we did not get a chance to cover yet that you were like, that you wanted to make sure we did? We've gone in a lot of different directions here. You've also just given a ton of great information for folks. Is there anything we didn't get a chance to get into yet that you wanted to?
No, I think we covered pretty good amount. Just get educated on what tools you have, what access to what instruments you have. I have one-on-one brainstorming calls for free on our platform. So just create an account on Citizen X and you get access to my calendar, schedule a free call. Happy to do that. I'm excited to start developing new programs in new jurisdictions that are targeting Bitcoiners specifically. We've seen El Salvador being born a Bitcoin native program, which I'm not going to say anything, but 3 years ago, I did write an open letter to President Bukele saying they should launch a program. But
really?
Like this acquisition, Plan B passport acquisition by Citizen X, partially reason behind it is because we want to be that accelerator in a sovereign individual thesis that helps those nations launch digital native, Bitcoin native programs to start attracting the actual capital, not the fiat fake money, but the real money, and allow Bitcoiners to vote with their capital.
I love it. Where do you want to send people? I'll link that chart that we pulled up as well, but just citizenx.com. Anywhere else you want to send folks, I'll link it all in the show notes.
Yeah, I can give you my cal.com link so people can schedule a call right away.
Sure.
Yeah, doing it through Citizen X is the best way because I'll ask you a couple of questions that will help me prepare for the call. Well, appreciate it very much.
Yeah, it was great having you on, and now I'm coming out of this thinking I need some more passports. So I guess mission accomplished on both counts. But yeah, I'm very bullish on the United States of America, but again, doesn't hurt to have options, especially when those options are perfectly legally accessible. So I need to look back through my ancestry. I'm a bit of a mutt. So I'll have to see what I can do.
Yeah, let's look into that. Well, yeah. Thank you so much. Really appreciate this, this The Bitcoin Podcast. So
you're welcome back anytime, Katie. Great to see you.
Great to see you too. Thank you, Walker.
I'm just going to cut.
And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of The Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Nostr at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to The Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.